On this episode, I talk with writer, producer, Sonia Campbell. We go over our favorite and least favorite Stephen King film adaptations. When you get done with this episode, make sure you check out my fellow horsemen of the podcast apocalypse, Into the Necrosphere podcast, Everything Went Black podcast, and the Necromaniacs podcast. You definitely dig those, trust me, they're fucking killer. So, thank you for listening and hope you enjoy. All right, thanks for being on the podcast, Sonia.
No problem. It's pronounced Sonia, by the way. Just want everyone to know that.
I got it right, didn't I?
I don't know.
I said so
there's
Sonia.
There's a little bit of O, long O in there, but it's Sonia.
Sonia.
You got it. Rhymes with lasagna.
Cool, yeah, I'll make sure I get that right. So sorry about that if I didn't get it right at first, but I am trying.
Pretty close.
That's good.
I live in Arizona. Everybody pronounces it Sonia, and I don't like that at all. But anyway.
Awesome. Well, Sonia, can you tell me a little about your production company, Crown Chimp?
Sure. Yeah. So we're based here in Tucson, Arizona. We're a small independent film and commercial production company. I've been with the company I think about 6 years. I want to say they've been going around 10 to 12 years. The owner and our director is Nicholas Duarte. And it's pretty much just like our core members are myself, obviously Nick and Frank Armendariz. And we work with a lot of great, talented crew based here and other places. We have a pretty cool, fun slate right now with a lot of kind of transcendental type stuff, horror and sci-fi, and even a little bit of crime drama. I've been working with them a while. I used to do effects makeup for them and then gradually got more into wanting to write. So that's kind of where my focus has been.
Killer. And I reviewed one of the short films. Was it Old Man, I believe, was the name of it?
Yeah, Old Man Forever.
Mm-hmm. Yes. That was killer. I really enjoyed that. I'm still looking for maybe a full length one day.
Tell me about it. Yeah, it's based on a feature that I wrote called Denture Fangs. And boy, in my head, I have the whole cast and everything, you know. But it's tough. Independent film is really difficult. Just trying to make some leeway, and hopefully one day you'll see a feature of that.
Killer, yeah. Is that streaming anywhere for people to check out, or?
Old Man Forever, yeah. I believe it's up on Vimeo.
Okay, killer. Yeah, I highly recommend that one. It was really cool, and it's somewhere buried deep on my website because it's hard to navigate my review website. It's pain in the ass. It's Weebly. Thanks, Weebly. Yeah, but it's somewhere on there. Like, if you find it buried under there, I got a pretty cool review about it because really awesome. You should check it out. So,
thanks.
Yes. So this podcast is going to be talking Stephen King. So we both compiled a list of favorites and not so favorites, and I have like five of each, and I think Sonia has maybe a few, like five and maybe four, some she don't like, but it's a good list, I think, and we're going to talk about that today.
Yeah.
All right. You want to start from the good or the bad?
Maybe we should sort of switch back and forth just so we're not like heavy on the good and heavy on the bad. What do you think?
I'm down with that. Yeah, let's go we'll start from say number five for me, work our way up to number one.
You ranked them?
Yeah, we'll go good first, and we'll do one bad, one good, one bad. So do something like that if you're down.
I like it. Did you rank them like one to five, or is it no order?
I did, but they're not it's not really solid, you know what I mean? They can be swapped around at will. But I think my number one for my favorite, though, is kind of my number one. So.
Okay, cool.
But everybody else is kind of swappable.
Same here.
All right. Well, I will start this off, I reckon, here. It was going to be The Shining was going to be my number five, but it's kind of a given with The Shining because it's one of the best Stephen King adaptions, even though it's not quite like the book, but it's still really killer. So I decided just to kind of have that out there, kind of floating around, this is a gimme on The Shining. So my true number five is going to be The Night Flyer.
The Night Flyer. Wow. I didn't expect that one. And why is that your favorite?
Well,
not a favorite, number five.
Yeah. Well, it's my number five favorite just because growing up, this was one of the films that would pop up on Fox or whatever channel that you have equivalent to Fox back in the day, and it scared the shit out of me. Like, so it's well done. You. What's that?
It stuck with you.
It did, yeah, and it made an impression on me as a kid, and even as an adult, like, finding this film again on YouTube, because there's hardly any other way to watch it, I believe. I don't think there's any Blu-rays. I don't think there's any DVDs floating around. I think it's all like VHS quality. But wow. It's always fucking stuck with me, you know, like especially the special effects with the vampire and stuff, that giant gaping mouth, you know what I mean? It's like, yeah. And it's just really, really creepy, and I think well done, and it's kind of a deep cut for Stephen King, you know?
That is. When do you think is the last time you saw it?
Not that long ago. I think maybe 2 years ago. I was on a YouTube hunting spree on like weird ass movies that you can't find nowhere else. You know, you go down that rabbit hole. So I went down the rabbit hole and that one popped up again. I was like, oh, cool. So I rewatched it and it still holds up really well.
Nice pick. I think I might check it out on YouTube because I don't think I've ever seen it.
Oh, wow. Yeah, you're in for a treat. That's fucking awesome.
The Night Flyer.
The Night Flyer. What's that?
Was it from the 80s?
No, it's actually from 1997.
Oh, wow. 97. Interesting. Yeah. Maybe I have seen it.
Yeah. And it stars Miguel Ferreira, if you remember him. He's a really good character actor. He passed away like a few years ago, maybe more than a few years ago. But he's like the main detective on the case of the Night Flyer, trying to track him down for a newspaper, kind of like one of those like Star magazines or whatever, where they do all like the weird shit, you know what I mean? So he works for one of those people, and he's trying to track down this Night Flyer who's going around town to town killing people, but they don't know it's a vampire. So
was it, do you know if it was based on one of the short stories? Sounds like a short story.
I believe it was.
Yeah.
Short story off the top of my head right now. I'm looking it up, but I'm not finding nothing off the top of my head.
It says, based on an 88 short story. Makes sense.
It might have been in the Skeleton Crew short story competition, maybe.
Oh, cool. I love that book.
Yeah, I got a shit ton of Stephen King hardcovers. We got from somebody selling them at a flea market. They didn't know they had first editions.
What?
Me and my wife scooped them all up. Did not tell that person anything. Like, they didn't know. They're trying to sell all this shit. Like, okay, we'll take this. And we'll take the Anne Rice stuff over there, too.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I got a ton of stuff off this one person at a flea market many years ago.
I love book hunting. Have you read any of his new work, by chance?
Yeah, I think the last thing I read from him was... what's the one that came after The Outsider? Do you remember? It's like kind of a detective ghost story type thing.
I'm not sure. I was reading one of, I think it's called Lisey's Story is the last one I was reading.
Oh, I haven't read that, but I saw the miniseries on Apple.
Yeah.
I enjoyed that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know how to watch Apple TV yet. I'm still trying to figure that out.
Yeah, it's a little confusing. Like, once you get the app or whatever installed on whatever I use a Roku, and you get the app on there, there's like the free part up there for the Apple TV subscribers, and then there's some other shit you can add on there. But they got some cool, like, original stuff if you can find it.
Yeah, that's what I've been hearing.
All right, so we're going to go with a least favorite of mine. We're going to go down to the number 5 on that one, and this is going to be probably a lot of people's least favorite. It was the... Dark Tower film from 2017.
Yeah, I completely blocked that out of my memory.
It had some good qualities. I like Idris Elba as you know, the gunslinger. I thought that was a cool choice, and I even thought Matthew McConaughey was kind of cool as, you know, the man in black. But besides that, everything else was pretty much horrible.
It's really weird because, I mean, you know, it's one of those stories where it could have been amazing and everyone was looking forward to it. And like you said, the casting was a really good. There's a lot of really good choices. But then, what happened?
I think they tried to squeeze it all in one film. Like, I don't even know what story they were kind of taking away from because, you know, I just recently got through with all the books. It took me like 2.5 years to get them all done audiobook wise. So it was pretty fresh on my mind and stuff. And I was like, they took a lot of liberties here and there and just tried to squeeze all kinds of main shit into one movie. And it doesn't work like that. It should have been at least a miniseries, possibly an actual TV show.
Yeah, a miniseries would have been great.
And there was talks about that a few years ago. Amazon was supposed to be doing something with it, and I think it fell through.
Mm-hmm. But we'll see what happens.
Yeah, you never know. Amazon's always working on something. Like, they got the new Lord of the Rings coming out. So if you can do Lord of the Rings, you can do The Stand. I'm sorry, not The Stand. But they were doing The Stand. But I'm talking about they can do the Dark Tower series.
Yeah. So. I kind of don't want to see The Stand anymore.
Yeah, I'm good on the TV.
Over again.
I didn't. And I did not like that. I think that made my list of some of the worst ones, too. The actual new Stan TV show. It started off all right, but I was like, God. It was like it's like watching Walking Dead almost. You know, it had that same feel to it, which I really don't care for too much.
Yeah, so, it's kind of played out.
Yeah, I'm good on that. Let's do some Dark Tower stuff, you know.
Uh-huh.
All right, so let's throw it back at you, I reckon, there for your, I guess, favorite number five.
Favorite number five. All right. Let me kind of, I guess we'll put this at number five. I'm going to go with Misery. Like, how does Misery end up number five? Well, it just does. And I'll tell you why. but I mean, it's such a like classic film overall, you know, Kathy Bates won Best Actress that year. Everybody kind of likes Misery. Like, I could probably, my mom would watch it with me, you know. But the reason it's in the top five at all is just the theater experience is so memorable, and that goes a long way. You know, the scene where Annie hobbles Paul with a sledgehammer, and just the sheer horror of the audience's reaction. You know, I remember I saw it with my brother, and we were just like squirming in our seats, so uncomfortable. Because you can relate somehow to that pain, you know? You're just like, don't do it, don't do it. Oh my God, she's going to do it. And it's horrific, you know? And I watch it every now and then, you know, when you put something on in the background and then you get sucked into it and just start watching it.
Mm-hmm.
I was watching it maybe in the past year and just like really enjoying the performances. But it was weird because this time around I was like, James Caan is kind of sucks in that movie. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know if it's because he's like opposite of Kathy Bates. That might be it. But some of the lines he delivered, I was like, ooh, I don't
think so. A bit over the top. It was a bit.
Yeah, yeah. It's weird because I never realized it until I watched it again recently. And I was just like, wow, okay.
The sledgehammer scene still hurts, by the way, too. Even watching it now, like, I can still feel that shit. It's so horrible.
Totally. Yeah, so that's my number five. And then I'll mention one of the ones I really don't like, an adaptation. Well, we were just talking about it, so let's continue with the CBS Access, CBS All Access. I guess it was 2020, 2021 miniseries for The Stand. I am still trying to recover from that one. I agree with you. I think we even discussed it a little bit through an IM where we were just like, oh, this seems pretty good when it started out. You know, I was like, all right, okay, I'm getting my bearings. And then, I don't know, it just kept getting worse and worse. And by the time they went to Vegas, it was like, why am I still torturing myself watching this? It was just like painful to watch, you know, because it was like, it wasn't so much that, you know, like, I think it was fine in terms of it staying along the path of the story, I guess, but they just focused on some weird stuff, you know, and some of the lines in there were like, ooh, why did they make him say that? And the characters were just too like stereotypical and over the top. So
yeah, I didn't really like any of them.
Bad. Yeah. And again, like if I really hate something, I start to totally wipe it out of my memory. So it's like hard to get more specific other than I hated it a lot. But, you know, I feel like I maybe had high expectations too.
I did. It was hyped up pretty big, like especially around the horror community and stuff, you know, like, oh, The Stand's coming. This is going to be in it. This is directing it. You know, this is going to be like this. And when it came out, I was like, oh, man.
Yeah. Like, how did it get so wrong? And I always kind of think, even though I probably shouldn't think this way, that when something is done in the past, in the 80s or 90s or whatever year, that it can only get better now, you know, with technology. But that's not the case. That's just not the case. So I would rather watch the one from, what was it, the 90s or late 80s than this one again.
Yeah, most definitely. Only a standout part of this new TV series, I thought Skarsgård was a decent man in black. That's probably about it. I mean, I don't like how he's portrayed in the series, but him as the Man in Black, I think that will work out really well if it was used better, you know?
Oh, yeah. I that makes sense. Yeah. He's such a good actor. It was weird, you know, when you see good actors being bad actors, it's like, who's to blame? Somebody's to blame, and it's not him.
He's going to make all that up in the new film coming out. The new, was it the new Viking Northman? Film?
The Norseman.
Yeah.
Man, I can't wait for The Northman. It looks incredible. And like, you know, Robert Eggers, like everything he's done is just like pure art. And now I feel like he's just like, can do anything, you know, like he's the only director, the only filmmaker out there who I can imagine doing Nosferatu, and it looks like he will be doing it. And I can't wait. Like I feel like he'll do it justice.
Is that going to have William Dafoe in it? I saw some rumors about that, him playing Nosferatu.
I don't know. I think that's cool. I like that idea, but yeah. I've only seen like that as a rumor, but I think that would be a great casting.
That'd be so badass. You wouldn't need to put much makeup. Required. What's that?
Shave his head. Let's let him go.
Yeah, that's all you need. Shave his head and let him go, because he's already got the bone structures there, you know, and he's got that crazy ass like smile and stuff. Like, it'd be perfect.
Yeah, he actually kind of does, you know. I bet he'd do something similar to like how Klaus Kinski did his performance in Herzog's Nosferatu.
Oh yeah,
kind of similar features.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I read the script too that Eggers wrote, and it was really, really well written, very captivating from the start. So I hope that that's all going to be done in, you know, the next few years.
That would be killer. Yeah, I hope so too. All right, so we're going to go with my number four favorite adaptation, and that's going to be another weird one for some people who probably haven't seen it, but it was a TV miniseries, Storm of the Century.
Oh, wow. Another deep cut.
Yeah, like I said, he's got so much stuff out there that's been done. Like, I didn't want to really go over stuff that everybody knows, you know, maybe a little bit, you know, deeper on the cut. So, and Storm of the Century is another one that, that whole time period where they're bringing all these killer, like King miniseries and stuff. And I was still in like maybe middle school, I think. And, staying up late watching these, and Storm of the Century scared the shit out of me as well as a kid. Fucking when Bush comes to town.
Late 90s?
Yeah, 1999 is when this came out.
Oh, right, yeah. So it's Tim Daly. I love Tim Daly.
Yeah, Tim Daly's awesome. And then you had Lenoge, who was played by stupid IMBD. Doesn't even show Lenoge's character on here. He's got a kind of strange name. I'll make sure I try to at least get it.
Colm Feore?
Yeah, that's it. Colm Feore, yeah. They don't even have his name on fucking Internet Movie Database. Sometimes they're great, sometimes they're not. I'm like, yeah, it's today.
Yeah. Anybody can put whatever they want on there, too.
What's that?
Anybody can put what they want on there, too. Like, I've seen some people just being, like, including myself, you know, like, uncredited extra. Like, who the hell is this? And why isn't, like, the third most popular actor in here on IMDb?
Yeah, that's what they have going on right here for their top people. It's just like some extras pretty much. And like, you only see Tim Daly on there trying to be all professional with my tablet here with my information right next to me, and the shit ain't even right. So yeah, that's what happens when you try, I reckon. So, but yeah, Century.
You got to wiki that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. And then sometimes wiki is weird too.
It's true. That's another one where anybody can kind of contribute, right?
Yeah.
It looks like Stephen King wrote that screenplay for TV.
Mm-hmm. And it's well done. Special effects are a little weird because they got some kind of dated CGI, especially with the cane, but everything else wise, it's dark, man. Like, you can imagine that happening in a storm, like, you know, this crazy snowstorm going on, and you got this stranger coming to town, you know. It's like, that part's kind of plausible. Then, you know, it turns to like an evil wizard towards the end, which is pretty badass.
Yeah, you can't top an evil wizard.
I definitely can see a connection there in the Dark Towers too. I bet he is that character somewhere in the world, you know, of the Dark Towers. I bet he's from that, you know, I guess you'd call it dimension, you know. So
yeah, that would make sense.
But yeah, super evil. Like
a number four favorite. What's a four number four worst or least favorite?
Let's see what we got here. I got another list pulled up here next to me. All right, my number four least favorite was the 2013 version of Carrie.
Oh, yeah, that's a good not so great.
Yeah, that one was rough. I'm like, you know, with the budget they had and stuff, and you know, had a decent cast, you think it'd be a little bit better, but it wasn't.
I'm not sure why they even bothered doing it again, you know.
That's the problem.
A whole feel. Yeah.
Why would you remake something that don't need to be remade? Like, the original was great and it was fine, you know, and then you want to remake it and make it way worse than what it should be. It wasn't good. And even the CGI in there was real questionable, which I don't like CGI anyways. But, yeah, it just wasn't – it was boring. Didn't like it.
I would never try to remake anything De Palma's done. That's just silly.
Yeah.
But – I guess, you know, I wouldn't have minded seeing a mini series of Carrie, though. That would be kind of interesting. Maybe that's just like Euphoria.
I've given that one episode so far, Euphoria.
Oh, it's horrific in a lot of ways. Euphoria is great.
A lot of recommendations for it from a lot of people I know. I'm like, all right, I watched one episode. I don't know where I stand yet. I'm like, it seems dark as fuck. You know, they got some really dark scenes in this film, really cool. So I might keep on with it, you know.
Yeah. It's a whole mood. I binge them all at once and then feel really bad for a while. But yeah, I think if Carrie was done as a miniseries in the style of Euphoria, that would be amazing.
Oh, yeah, that would be cool. Like I said, just from the first episode, just the way it's filmed and all, Carrie would look a lot better filmed like that. That's how it should be, like super dark, but stylized and stuff, you know.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
I'm a sucker for that. Like, it's got good cinematography and like it looks really nice. It just adds a lot to me liking it.
Yeah, I'm the same way. Style goes a really long way. Even if something's kind of bad, if it's got some style, it's like I'm down. I'll remember that film forever because of that.
That was another bad aspect of the new Stand series was the way it was filmed. Like I said, it was filmed like The Walking Dead. It looked like The Walking Dead to me. You know, like another post-apocalyptic fucking TV show that you find on some channel. It just didn't have any kind of like gripping nothing to it. There's no style. There's nothing there, you know.
Totally. Yeah. It's surprising sometimes when you see things like on Amazon or wherever that have, or I guess in that case it was CBS, but you know they have money and it's like, where is it being spent? Because some of the sets and things looked like garbage and, you know. But, I mean, it's hard to criticize. I'm sure there's a bunch of people who worked on the film that tried their best, but and it all came down kind of to story.
Yeah, most definitely. And I think a lot of money probably went into the actors' pockets, you know, so pretty big names on there.
Yeah, totally.
All right. So I guess we'll go to your number. What are we at? Number four?
Favorite? Four pop. Yeah. Well, mine are, you know, compared to you, I'm not trying to go for any deep cuts.
No, that's kinda, cool. I mean, whatever hits you.
I'm the opposite side of the spectrum of just things everyone has heard of, but I can't help it, you know. I do have a list of like, you know, ones I would mention that are off the top five that are great. But number four has got to be Pet Sematary. And again, that's one of those I saw in the theater when I was a kid and it left a lasting impression. I did read the book also when I was a kid and it scared the shit out of me. And I remember reading that it was like, I read this somewhere, so I'm not 100% sure if it's true, but it was like the only book that actually scared Stephen King while he was writing it. I think that says a lot. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's just so dark in so many different levels, you know, like who wouldn't want to bring back a dead relative? You'd try it even if they might come back a total like creep, you know?
Oh yeah.
But yeah, there's quite a few things in that film that I thought really were standout, and that make it a classic, you know, horror film. And one of them is the sister Zelda that just was, oh wow, just very disturbing scenes with her, you know.
Right.
And also I loved the character Pascal. He was creepy, one of those typical kind of Stephen King characters, you know, just some weirdo being too friendly with a kid but trying to like forewarn everybody. Mm-hmm. And you know, the scene where Gage gets hit by the semi, like I'll never forget the way I felt in the theater seeing that little shoe flying and the dad just like screaming in agony. It was awful, you know, and it was like really impactful, no pun intended, you know, it was like, stood with me. Interestingly, like, it actually has a woman, a female director, you know, I kind of forget some, there's also female directors in horror out there. It was Mary Lambert that directed it. And I think Stephen King wrote the screenplay too. So I don't know, maybe when he writes the screenplay, they're better, but it's just, you know, it's not like flawless, but it's always going to be one of my favorites, maybe, you know, any kind of horror film.
Yeah, that's like a yearly watch for me. I think around Halloween, October time, I usually watch Pet Sematary and Pet Sematary 2 because I like both of them almost equally. It might be heresy to like the second one almost as much as the first one, but I do.
I didn't see the new one, the remake, did you?
Yeah, you can skip that.
I'll skip it.
I wanted to like it, I really did. I even won like a signed shirt from the director of that film, but it never got me, so I guess that was probably okay thing.
Nice.
Yeah, so I'm not complaining, I'm like, fine, it's all right, but yeah.
You're like, I really wanted to set that shirt on fire, no fair.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. But I can recommend the audiobook of Pet Sematary read by Michael C. Hall.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I love Michael C. Hall. Awesome.
Yeah.
That's perfect. I'd like to hear him read lots of different things. You know, that kind of reminds me, remakes. I get down a lot on remakes, but not because I want to. I want to see a good remake. I'm all for a good remake. But nine times out of 10, it's just so poorly done that I don't see the point of why it was ever made in the first place. It just doesn't make sense. Like, I don't know if they're trying to go for a new, younger audience or what, but it's like, if you're going to do it again, then maybe make it good and not just, you know, regurgitate the same scenes from the original, which is strange, you know, like, but I can think of some decent remakes, they're few and far between, you know, like I thought the 2013 Evil Dead remake was really good.
I was about to say that. Yeah, I really enjoyed that one. I enjoyed being in a theater and hearing people start screaming when they start cutting their arm off with like the turkey cutter or whatever it was.
Yeah.
That was great.
Yeah. And you know, Fede Alvarez, what he did, what is that other one? Don't Breathe. And I really enjoyed that film too.
Yeah.
It was just like really like a tight movie, you know, like they filled every plot hole they could possibly think of. And so I was super looking forward to the Texas Chainsaw Massacre Netflix film, but hey, that just didn't go my way. I will say it was not as bad as I, you know, kind of reacted to it, but I don't want to be bored in the first 5 minutes. Is that too much to ask? I don't know.
I kind of enjoyed it. I give it like a 7 out of 10, which ain't, you know, super high. It's just whatever. But in terms of just having fun watching the kills, and I thought the Leatherface was actually cool. His character was cool. Everybody else, I didn't like anybody in that film. So
no, it's like go ahead and kill them all.
Yeah,
but I mean, cool. If it wasn't under the umbrella of Texas Chainsaw Massacre, if it was just called something else, you know,
yeah,
Austin. Definitely. Assholes go to a small town or something, I'd like it, you know, but it was just like, it's just too much to live up to.
Yeah, definitely.
So.
But it was a lot better than the last Texas Chainsaw movie. Well, the last couple ones, New Generation is still better. New Generation.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Without a doubt.
I just rewatched that too, and I was like, oh, I'm watching all the Chainsaw movies. I did it over a couple months. And I got a new generation. Like, oh, maybe it's aged okay, you know? There's no fucking kills in the damn movie, man. I think there may be one kill during the whole movie. There's hardly no gore at all. It's just very tame. Only a highlight of that whole thing is Matthew McConaughey's character with the fucking robotic leg.
Oh, that yeah.
Cool, you know?
Yeah, I just want to take him and his character and make something else.
Yeah, and they totally disowned that movie. Him and Renee Zellweger like disowned it forever. Now they're finally like, oh yeah, we were in that one. You know, it's cool. It's just one of our first films. I totally get why you disowned it. It fucking sucked. And even Leatherface in that movie was fucking horrible.
Ugh, you can disown it all they want. We'll never forget.
No, we won't. And also the other, I think it was a Netflix movie too, Leatherface, like, you know, the coming of age Leatherface story that turns out not to be who you think it is. You remember that one?
No, I didn't. I just vaguely. I don't think I watched. No, I didn't watch it.
Oh, you're lucky then. That's good.
Weird.
It was horrible. You think this one's like, you know, from the baddest it can be? No, no. Go check out Leatherface. It makes no fucking sense. Doesn't even feel like a Texas Chainsaw movie whatsoever. I don't know what it is. It says it's a chainsaw movie. I don't know, but it was horrible.
I think, you know, around 2003 is when I started getting angry at bad remakes with the Texas Chainsaw Massacre film that came out then. Like, there's way too many, you know. That's the one with Jessica Biel.
Right.
And I, at the time, I used to have like a review website for horror stuff. Mm-hmm. And I would get, you know, just like books or DVDs or even CDs back in the day. You'd actually get physical media. But I like ripped on that one, the 2003 Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And then, not thinking about it, I asked the guy that played Leatherface to do an interview, and he was like, "Are you fucking kidding me?"
Oh shit! Yeah, it was Andrew Brzezinski or something.
Andrew Brzezinski. Yeah, it was ugly.
Yeah,
it didn't go well, that whole exchange. I was like, "Why did he even read my review?" You know.
Yeah, I guess he's thorough. I give him that. At least he's checking stuff out. You know.
I mean, yeah, I guess if you're going to be asked to do an interview, you might check out the website and see what kind of stuff they write, right? I mean, that's reasonable.
Yeah.
But no, I had been given his contact info, and this 03 was still in the AOL days, I remember. Mm-hmm. This is, you know, this is back in the Hot or Not days, 03. It's weird to think that it was that long ago, but we're talking.
03 is a long time ago.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like it, but it's almost 20 years ago. But crazy. Yeah, we had like a mutual friend, and then I was like, okay, I'll reach out to him. And yeah, I just really didn't expect his outlash. Like, he got really Leatherface on me.
Was it like an in-person kind of thing or over?
No, it was all online, and okay. He was pissed. That I just like trash the film, but I don't like anything that has like a baby as like a reason to feel emotional and drive a story. You know, I was like really went off on that and just that it sucked overall. But I could see his point of view. You know, it's like, I just spent all this time and effort working on this film, wanting to be an iconic horror character. And you're over here asking me for an interview and ripping on the film I did, but no regrets. It was funny. I look back at it. And at that time, too, I used to talk to online Eli Roth a little bit. It was because I was a big fan of Cabin Fever, and he hadn't really done anything else yet. But he told me that Andrew Brzezinski came up to him at a convention once and, you know, wasn't under his control. But Eli Roth, they set up his table with a big banner that said Master of Horror. Uh-huh. And Andrew Brzezinski walked up and was like, "Master of Horror, you made one fucking movie, dude." And he said he was wearing like a Texas Chainsaw Massacre hat and shirt, you know, and I think that's pretty funny and hasn't aged well.
Yeah.
Because that was probably too, so one of the was.
I bet that was a bit intimidating for him too, seeing him coming after him like fucking Leatherface. Oh shit, don't piss him off.
Yeah, and not even Leatherface. It's just like a big ex-pro wrestler. Like, get lost. But yeah, anyway, sorry to sidetrack there. I thought
oh, that's cool. We're sidetracking, no problem.
But yeah, he told me that Andrew read everything, so I shouldn't have been surprised, and he knew a lot about horror films.
No. Wow. All right, so I guess we're on to your least favorite now.
Okay, let's see. I think that I'm going to save the worst for last. So I'm going to go with Stephen King's Thinner, because I saw it not too long ago. I thought, hey, I haven't seen Thinner in a long time, and it was on Hulu, you know, and Tom Holland is the director, and how bad could it be? Because I love Fright Night and Child's Play, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I put on Thinner, and I was like, is this Norbit? Like, it's just such a bad movie. Like, the makeup, you know, the fat suit looks so dated and silly, and the performances are over the top, and it didn't, like, that tone of over the top and bad acting didn't fit well with this kind of like just short, simple story. The stuff with the gypsy was just super corny, and yeah, I think it went bad in so many ways, and it was almost unwatchable from a serious perspective. I was just like, no, dude, it hit and miss with Tom Holland, and this is a big miss.
And wasn't the lead actor, wasn't he the dad from Beethoven or something? Like, he's got that face. Like,
right.
That, Yeah, it looks like after Beethoven or something. Like, I know that face. I haven't looked him up or anything, but I'm like, man, he looks familiar.
It's so funny. Yeah, Robert John Burke. I don't know. I haven't seen Beethoven in a while, but he was a terrible actor in that movie. And I just say in that movie because, like, that's the one performance where I know for sure he was bad. I can't think of another film he's in right now.
It's like, I thought it was supposed to be a comedy, but it wasn't really supposed to be a comedy. It's like, it sure felt like some sort of like dark comedy or something, but.
Exactly. It had a tone of a comedy, but with like no comedy whatsoever.
Right. Yeah. It did not age well.
No, you can't make a movie like Thinner today. You get canceled.
Yeah, most definitely. I remember back when I was a kid watching it for the first time, I thought it was kind of cool, but I didn't really know any better, you know?
Sure, yeah. I think I would have liked it as a kid and been like, this is great, you know, but no, it didn't hold up.
No, I totally agree on that one. All right, so we're going to my number three favorite Stephen King adaption. And like I said, a lot of the big ones I already know are like fucking top five, so I skipped those and went more a little deeper dive on these, so... But this one here is kind of big. I mean, everybody knows this film, but it's a 1985 Silver Bullet.
Oh, yeah. That's in my honorable mention list.
Oh, man. I fucking love it. As you know, I love werewolves. I fucking named the podcast after werewolf stuff. And I've just loved werewolves since I was a kid. And this is one of the main reasons I love werewolves with Silver Bullet. Just watching this growing up, like, it's so good. I mean, what better... What gets any better than a fucking kind of demonic preacher fucking werewolf? I mean, that's a great combination. Totally. You know, it's like
it
so
people. Yeah, I agree, and I love Corey Haim, man, and Gary Busey was great too.
Yeah, the cast was fucking great. This was Gary Busey at his optimal maximum Buseyness, and it was really good. And he played the role as, you know, drunk and crazy uncle, because we all have those, and he played it to a fucking T, you know.
And that's basically him.
Yeah, it was just like, hey, you don't even really need to act, Gary. Just come on set, bring some liquor with you, and just let it flow.
Yeah, I feel like he was probably sober in that film because he's good.
He might not even know he was filming. Was this a documentary or something? You know?
Yeah, another werewolf story happening around in my life. Yeah, it's typical. But yeah, I miss Corey Haim, man. I really miss that guy. He's such a, like, you know, the classic 80s. Teen Heartthrob, and of course, you know, Lost Boys is one of my favorite films.
Same here.
So, yeah, it's one of those, like, it just sticks with you forever, 80s horror film, Silver Bullet. I'll rewatch that anytime it's on. Oh, I don't, like, go out of my way to watch it, but if it's on, I'm going to watch it.
I always loved that, like, killer, like, kind of motorcycle, like, wheelchair that he had that, you know, Busey made for him and stuff. Like, that's so fucking bad. I always wanted one of those, but not, you know, not the wheelchair thing, but like a motorcycle when I was a kid. I wanted one of those, but it never happened.
Like, I wish I was crippled so I could have that badass wheelchair.
Fucking, like I said, with the preacher, Everett McGill is his name. Twin Peaks fame, you know, like. Yeah, he's creepy in anything he plays in, and him playing a werewolf is just like the ultimate.
So good. Yeah, I think Silver Bullet is definitely one of my favorite werewolf movies. That and Bad Moon.
Oh, I love Bad Moon. That's kind of a deep cut too, because I've mentioned it to people and they've never seen it before. I'm like, oh shit, you never seen Bad Moon? That's like, all right, it's streaming on this place right now. Go check it out. I think it's on Shudder right now, actually.
And, oh yeah, cool.
Yeah, Bad Moon is so fucking good. It's one of the best werewolf designs ever.
For sure. Absolutely. Yeah. That and Dog Soldiers. I love the werewolves in those films. They did such a badass job. Like, it's like, to me, just like practical effects and costumes at their best, you know?
Yep.
It's like simple, but really effective.
And it's something you could really believe that would be that way. Say werewolves were real. That's what they would look like, I think. You know, the perfect combination of kind of humanoid fucking werewolf. I mean, you know, wolf. And that's like the perfect combination.
For sure. Yeah. It's like The Howling, Dog Soldiers, Bad Moon, Ginger Snaps, and American Werewolf, obviously. Everyone knows. You know what's weird is I kind of like American Werewolf in Paris as well.
I do too, man. A lot of people hate on that movie, but I love that movie for the fact it's a cool fucking movie. You got fucking badass, like, kind of metal werewolves in Paris over there and stuff. It's just the special effects are kind of what fucked it up. All the CGI now, like, it looks really bad now. It didn't look great back then, but if it wasn't for the CGI, like, it'd be a really awesome movie overall, but it's still got a cool story.
It was funny too. Like I laughed out loud. Some of that.
Yeah, and
stuff.
It was supposed to be like, you know, it was that had a dark comedy element, which, you know, that's what it was. But it gets a lot of hate. People fucking hate that movie. I'm like, I love it. I still got it on VHS somewhere.
I'm glad we agree on this. There should be a resurgence. Just like people have never heard of American Werewolf in London, just tell them only about In Paris.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, that sounds even better, man. I'm going to check that out. Yeah.
Have you watched American Werewolf in London in the past couple few years or so?
Oh, yeah. I've watched that one about once every year. Yeah.
I'm always a little bit surprised that it's popular because the story is kind of like it's not like linear. It's kind of dry, you know?
Yeah, it's
a guy and here's some stuff that happened and here's some really like top notch practical effects. Yeah. And then here's how it ends. It doesn't really feel like a super impactful like story. You know, it starts out as that, but then I always feel like it's kind of dry.
Yeah, that middle part's is definitely dry. Like the first half is cool, you know, when the whole attack happens and everything. And then the last, like, what, maybe 45 minutes where shit really goes crazy.
Yeah.
You know, when he starts transforming, and from then on, it's all like fucking nuts and, you know. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I've noticed that since we've gotten older. It's my favorite of all time, but I do notice the dry parts in it, you know. Like, right. I didn't realize that when I was little. I'm like, oh, okay.
Same here.
The whole thing was like fucking bloodthirsty werewolf on a rampage, but it's not.
No, it's not. Yeah, there's a like a large section where you're just like, ho hum. But and don't you know? Don't tell anyone I said that. I don't want to get lynched.
You'd be fine. People will be after you, but it's all right. Going back to Silver Bullet too. With their werewolf design, that one has a lot of like scrutiny around it because some people are like, oh, it looks like a big giant bear. You know, and it kind of does from certain angles, like, but I've come to appreciate the design a bit more, especially since it's practical, you know.
Yeah.
I see where they're going with it, you know. There are some issues through the whole film with the werewolf design and the, you know, crate and all that stuff. Like, something happened and had to compromise it to look like this, but it wouldn't look like that. So, and this came out, but I still think it looks all right. It's not the best, but, you know.
I can see the bear kind of thing. I feel like maybe they were trying a little bit for like the classic sort of Lon Chaney looking werewolf and it mixed kind of weird, you know, but I never really have a problem with it. It's fine.
Yeah. You know? That's what I think too. Like I said, and being that it had like really good CGI, if any CGI in 1985, but being that it is practical too. So it helps it with the aging process.
Sure. Yeah.
All right, so let's go to my number three least favorite Stephen King adaptation, and that's going to be Trucks.
Trucks?
Yeah, I didn't like Trucks.
I don't even know what that is. Is it like that's a good thing.
That's probably a really good thing. But I'll tell you the date on that real quick. I'm looking it up because this was like a copy of Maximum Overdrive. Because you know they have Maximum Overdrive and Trucks, and I think these are based off the same story.
Okay. It's kind of weird how he has like killer car things, you know, Christine, and then now Trucks and then Maximum Overdrive. But
yeah, I like Maximum Overdrive.
What? It was a film?
Yeah, it was a TV movie. It came out in 1897.
I see. Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. And the cast, I mean, had Aidan Devine, Timothy Busfield. I mean, the cast was pretty. Yeah, not much going on there. It was bad. It's got a 3.8 on Internet Movie Database.
Yeah.
I might agree with that. It was really bad. You know, it what they did was just copy Maximum Overdrive, make it a TV movie.
I see.
It's horrible. You know,
I see. Yeah, it's the basis of an 86 cult classic film. Okay. So that's what that's the same story. And then one is the TV series or the TV movie and the other is film. Yeah.
Yeah.
Not that Maximum Overdrive is great, but I still love it for like just kind of, you know, icon reasons. It's fun to see like Emilio Estevez in like those 80s films.
I miss Emilio Estevez. He hasn't played nothing since forever, right? The last thing I've seen him in.
I don't remember last time seeing him in anything except kind of like sort of a serious documentary. But it would be great to see his career do like a resurgence, you know?
Yeah, maybe you can pull the Nicolas Cage
on the phone.
Some shit.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of like looking at his IMDb, but not really seeing a lot. He was so funny. I loved him in like Young Guns and.
Yeah, Young Guns was great.
Anything 80s with Emilio Estevez was the shit.
Yeah, I miss all
Repo those Man.
From back then. Like all of that whole group of like 80s actors. You had him, Lou Diamond, Phillip, like all those guys. Yeah. It's like you don't have.
And Repo Man is a great movie and a great character.
Oh yeah. I love Repo Man.
For sure. Yeah.
But yeah, trucks you want to avoid. Since you haven't seen it, that's the best possible thing you can do unless you're really looking
for... who else should avoid trucks?
What's that?
Gage.
Oh, there you go. That's a good tie-in.
It's all right.
Yeah, he didn't avoid him though, so unfortunately.
Well, you know, he wanted his kite.
I mean, he was kind of cooler as an undead kid anyways, I think, but...
It was what?
He was cooler when coming back from the undead as like an undead killer.
Oh, group. Yeah. I love the little outfit. He looks like kind of like Baby New Year.
Yeah. And a little bit like Chucky. Had a little Chucky thing going on for sure.
There should be like a, you know, a list of the best babies in horror. I like the one from Dead Alive a lot. The little striped outfit. Yeah.
Yeah. That one's creepy as hell too. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't like kids, but if I had that kid, I'd feel okay.
Yeah, that's why we have cats, like no kids.
Exactly.
I'm good. Yeah. Like people want me to hold their kids all the time. Like, I don't want to hold your kid. I don't even want to touch your kid. I'm not responsible if this kid falls out my lap or something. I'm not that kind of person.
Weird.
I don't want to hold kids.
The last time I held a baby, I was when my nephew was born, and he's like 11 now. And I remember feeling like someone made me hold a giant burrito, and I had nothing. I didn't want to. You know, I was like, it doesn't feel like anything. So, anyways.
Yeah. It makes me uncomfortable.
I have no motherly instincts.
I have no fatherly stuff. Unless it's for the cats. I'm a good cat dad, but that's
not it. Oh, yeah. Cats are the babies.
I spoiled the shit out of them, so. Right. So, let's see. Your top, was it number 3 for you now? Yeah.
Okay. Well, okay. Let's just both agree that The Shining is up in our top fives, right?
Oh, yeah.
And that's for obvious reasons. Kubrick. Mm-hmm. And it's iconic. And it's always good.
Yes.
It's atmospheric, foreboding, and it will always feel fresh to me. So let's just take that as a given. And I'll go on to a double feature here. Creepshow 1 and 2.
Oh, hell yeah.
And again, for reasons of childhood memories. Creepshow 1 and 2 I saw at like I think it was for Halloween as a kid. They played like 5 horror films at the theater, and my parents let me stay up until Hellraiser, and I wasn't allowed to see that one. But the first couple were Creepshow 1 and 2 back to back, and it was like it was definitely the first experience I ever had where I realized that horror films can be fun and funny, not just scary. And it really made me have the appreciation I have for horror that I have today, which was like how these experiences with horror films can be a shared experience that, you know, everyone can enjoy on a different level. Not just, you know, a lot of people who don't like horror films, they don't want to be like frightened, and they don't want to feel terrible, and they don't want to feel, you know, just bad about like awful things that happen in humanity, you know. But Creepshow 1 and 2 made me realize, like, you don't have to take these things so seriously. You can have fun with it and get campy and just have a good time. So, and then of 1 and 2, my favorite stories are definitely from 1, The Crate, with the...
Oh, yeah, I love The Crate.
Badass creature, so good. Hal Holbrook and Adrian Barbeau. And then the second, and Creepshow 2 is The Raft. That one was so fun.
Yeah.
Such a creepy, like, good, weird story. And, you know, it's cool, like, just... directed by George Romero, and I was reading that Creepshow, the first one, was the his first screenwriting debut, or his screenwriting debut. I worded that weird. And you know, it kind of makes me think he should write screenplays for every Stephen King thing that comes out, because they're just seem like they're just better films for it.
Right.
But yeah, and then. You know, they're horror comedies, and I really like the Shudder series as well. I love horror anthologies. They're just super fun, you know, to have these like little bursts of different stories back to back.
Yeah, on the Creepshow TV series, a new one, I think my favorite, well, one of my favorites was the Jeffrey Combs, the werewolf one they did. I think it might have been season one. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah. That was really good. Yes. Yeah,
that was really cool.
And I like Grey Matter. That was based on a King short.
That was one of the first, that was the first episode too, wasn't it?
I'm not sure. I don't remember how, what order those were in. That was a good one. My favorite one of that, of the Shudder Creep Show was, I don't remember the name of it, but it's a little girl has that dollhouse with that head in it. Oh, is it just called The Head?
Yeah.
Maybe The Head.
I think it is The Head, yeah.
That one is so good. Like, I would love to see a feature of that movie, of that short story. That one was just great. Oh, it's called The House of the Head.
The House of the Head, okay.
So good. Yeah. There's a lot of really good good ones in there. There's mostly good, and then like a couple where I was like, eh.
Yeah, but overall, like, I think it's a success, and it's cool,
for
like,
sure,
having a newer generation of people, like, seeing, oh, Creepshow, this is their Creepshow now, you know, so, and then once they see this, they probably go back and watch original Creepshow, you know, so it's really cool.
Yeah, 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 it's a win-win. It's one of my favorite things on Shudder that they do.
Yeah, I love Shudder. I've been with Shudder since the beginning and stuff. I've said that a bunch of times on this podcast because I like Shudder. And especially with adding Joe Bob on there, so that just adds that much more value to Shudder, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Are they going to add Elvira, or did I read something wrong?
I thought they were because they did that special last year. So
yeah,
there's a chance maybe that will happen again this year, but I don't know for sure.
That'd be cool.
That would be cool. That's like two of the best horror hosts ever, in my opinion.
Yeah, yeah. That would be amazing. I miss, you know, the horror host.
Yeah, it's just fun. Yeah. Like, I guess it may be a little bit of nostalgia mixed in there, too. But is this something, like, it just makes the movie that much better. Even if the movie's not that great, just having Joe Bob on there, like, you know, he's an encyclopedia of fucking movies, like, going over things with you. Is this, I don't know, something special about that.
Yeah, it makes it a much better viewing experience. You know, you get the trivia, you get these little like jokes here and there. And same with Elvira. I always enjoyed watching her show when I was a kid and just would watch some, you know, sort of terrible film, but her interjections made it worthwhile.
Yeah, most definitely. And hopefully she'd be on Shudder again this year. But I haven't heard anything yet, but I'm watching.
Yeah. I'm sure she makes plenty of money with all of the conventions, though.
Oh, yeah. And she's going to be in the new Munsters movie. Or is it going to be a movie from Robson? I think it's going to be a movie. She just got announced a couple days ago she's going to be in it.
Oh, wow. Okay. Is that the Rob Zombie thing?
Yeah, it's a Rob Zombie one.
Huh. Interesting. Interesting.
Yeah. We shall see, right?
Yeah. I'll leave my comments out.
He said it's not gonna be a blood filled gore fest like all his other movies. It's gonna stick like the regular Munsters, like PG or PG-13. That way, you know, it's just like it used to be. He said it's not going up because people were asking like, oh, is this gonna be another like, you know, you taking this and turning it around, and making it super fucking brutal, so you can take your kids to this. He said so.
I really am tired of Sherry Moon though. Like really, like enough, please.
Yeah.
Go away, lady, forever.
She was cool in House of a Thousand Corpses and Devil's Rejects. You know, both were cool. But after that, like, she just kind of lost me on things. She's not very good with film. She's not a very good actor.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, it must be hard to say no to her, you know? Like, he's just like, I have to cast her in everything now. I have no idea why that keeps happening.
Did you ever see her in the remake of The Toolbox Murders?
No.
She was pretty good in that. She didn't last that long, though. I think she was one of the first to die in that. But that was a pretty good remake from what I can remember now. It's been a few years since I've seen it. Shit, more than a few years. But I thought the remake of The Toolbox Murders was pretty good. So,
I see. Yeah, I'm not. I'm way, way out of the Rob Zombie camp. Like, I can't stand him. I hate his films. And I gave them a shot, and they're just not for me. Like, I don't know. It doesn't connect with me, the style and the lines. And, like, I just can't get there, you know.
My favorite from his stuff is I like Lords of Salem, House of a Thousand Corpses. And I did like the first Halloween he did. But he's very hit and miss. Like, that's the three I like. Everything else is like, you know, it's not that great.
Yeah.
But. I love House of a Thousand Corpses. I remember going to the theater when I was a teenager to see that one, and people were going fucking nuts in there too because of all the craziness in that movie. And I was just like, oh, this is hilarious. And people were screaming and running out the movie theater. I'm like, damn.
I ran out almost just because I hated it, but, you know.
I remember seeing a movie called Black Mask. It was a Jet Li movie back in the day. I think it was Jet Li. Yeah. My dad walked out on it. He said, I'm not watching this with you. I was a little kid at the time. We were watching it together. He said, this is stupid because all like dubbed and stuff too. I was like, man, I want to watch Black Mask. And he fucking leaves. I'm like, well, I guess I got
to
leave too.
Oh, man. It takes a lot for me to actually like get up and leave. The last time I did was just because the audience was being so loud for some reason. It wasn't the movie, but yeah. If I paid money and I sat there and I'm going to stick it out, even if I just sit there and talk shit the whole time.
Yeah, I understand that. And also understand having a bad audience. That's a problem I have going to the movies. Like there's always assholes in there on their fucking phones or loud as shit, like talking to each other about random shit. I'm like, dude, I paid good money to sit here and watch a fucking movie. Why'd you even come? Like, why are you? You can be at home on your fucking phone.
They ruin it. Yeah. And lately, you know how you can choose the seats that you want. I don't understand why like anybody would then purchase the seat right behind a seat that's taken behind. I'm like, what the fuck are you doing? You have the entire theater and you're going to sit right behind. Now I feel weird, you know, now I can't talk or hang out or whatever. And because, you know, there's someone right behind me in this whole entire empty theater. That's another pet peeve, but. Yeah, at the Batman, it was basically ruined because of this weird person in front of us who would check her text messages and was acting really, really strangely. Like, I don't know. It was very distracting.
Yeah, it seems to be a common thing, too, nowadays, like going to the movie. I haven't been to movies in a while now just because of that. Because like every fucking time I go, I swear to God, them assholes on their phones. This is like, why? Like, I don't want this shit out. This is a phone-free zone. I'm not going to be on my fucking phone. Get off your fucking phone, you know?
You know what? I'm already anticipating how angry I will be if there's a bad audience at the Northman. Like, I'm going to be pissed. And that's not until April. So I'm already, like, thinking, which movie theater am I going to see it in? And, like, what time I should go? And, like, all these things so I can see it in theater and not be distracted or angry.
Best time to go is during a work week in the middle of the day. Everybody's at work.
Maybe so. I don't know. I don't know what to do.
Yeah, don't go on a Friday night, that's for sure. Or Saturday.
You always think like, hey, what kind of like ghetto asshole would be at this movie? And then sure enough, there's one. You know, they come in at the last minute too, you know, with their like cellophane candy. Ugh.
Like a bunch of frat boys coming after like having a party or some shit. Let's go see a movie, dude. And they're fucking walking there like the movie's halfway over. Where are we going to sit, man? Oh, I can't see anything, dude. And then guess what? They come sit by you. I'm like, what the fuck? You know, there's room in here. You want to come sit by me? Like, I hate that shit. All right. So now your least favorite number three.
Okay. So this is the... This is a 2-for-1, and these are the last of the least favorites, but these are big ones. So it's the the Andy Muschietti films of It and It 2. Is it It Part 2? I don't know.
Yeah, I have no idea, but I agree with you.
Chapter 2. Okay, well... you know, there was anticipation since the 90s miniseries. You know, thinking 90s miniseries, you can improve on it. Yeah, sure. A film, okay. I'm down, you know. Mm-hmm. And when there were rumors first about it, the director attached to it was Cary Fukunaga. And, you know, he's done awesome stuff. I think of True Detective, so I'm just like, hell yeah, that's perfect. Yeah. Apparently, you know, I think his scripts, his version strayed too far from the material and whatever creative differences, you know, that were blamed, it ends up in the hands of Andy Muschietti, who I only knew him from the film Mama. I don't think he'd done anything else, but not that it matters, but I wasn't like a big fan of Mama either. I was just kind of like, it was fine. It was okay. Yeah. You know, I wouldn't watch it again. And I thought, well, okay, let's just see how it turns out. But saw it in the theater and was like, you know, I thought Bill Skarsgård was a really good Pennywise.
Agreed.
And that's a lot, you know, just having a pretty, like a good Pennywise is a lot of positive things for a film. But then, you know, the rest of the movie, I was just like, this is corny. This is like, you know, everyone said the same thing and I'm going to say it too. It just felt like Stranger Things. It was just like,
definitely.
I'm not really into it. You know, it doesn't feel dark. It doesn't feel the way it felt when I read it when I was 10 years old. You know, it doesn't feel like the way that I felt when I saw it in the 90s. It just feels like group of fucking goonies, you know, and a clown. And it's just, bleh. But just when I thought it couldn't get any worse, along comes It Chapter 2. And It Chapter 2 is probably one of the worst movies I've ever seen in my life.
Wow.
And we just got done talking about Rob Zombie, so that says a lot. Like, it's so bad that I cringe literally watching it. And I feel embarrassed to be a human being watching it.
Damn.
And I see that Muschietti has now directed The Flash, and I wasn't a big fan of The Flash in the film that, what was it, the Justice League? I don't know. But
yeah.
I was like, wow, I really, really, really hate this character in this DC movie. And the thought of him doing an entire film about him, I just, wow. I feel like that's also going to be one of the worst movies ever made. But I don't know. I don't know. I just know what I do know, and that it, too, was like, it was like torture trying to watch it.
I can't even remember It too. And I've seen it. I don't even remember it. Like, I remember the first one, but it's hard for me to recall what the hell happens in the second one. And another,
that's what happens when something's bad, is your brain just goes, let's wash our hands of this.
Yeah. We only have so much fucking RAM in our head, you know? So I guess it's kind of deleting some of the shit we don't need.
Yeah. I don't even understand how that film got made. Like, It astonishes me, a film like that. Let's just not pick on It Chapter 2, but any film that's equally terrible. Like, just the fact that someone wrote it, and then other people read it, and then at some point people said, I have millions of dollars for you to now go and create the film. And at no point did someone go, wait, this is pretty bad. Like, it's amazing to me, you know, the way that that system operates. So we get so many garbage movies that are just like greenlit, you know, like, here's all the money I have for you. Go ahead and make this terrible script into a film. Like, I don't know. I get a little bit bitter when I think about all the bad horror films out there that got money.
Right.
And my bad horror film doesn't get any money. No. But, you know, on a Hollywood level of, like, major theatrical release, it's almost unacceptable, you know.
Another thing was
the fact that no one stopped it.
I heard a lot of people say, oh, man, those films are just like the book. They're right with the book. And I just got finished rereading it for, like, the fourth time. I was like, yeah, it's nothing like the fucking book. Have y'all read the book?
Yeah.
Like, everybody swears by, oh, it's just like the book. I'm like, no, it ain't. It's not even close.
Nah.
Stories are totally fucking different, you know. There's a few things that are similar, but... It's
and who cares if it's like the book, you know? Like, I'd rather see a good way off the script Cary Fukunaga It version that was really good and had the tone of the book than see whatever that was, you know?
And it totally didn't have the tone of the book, that's for sure.
No,
it did not feel dark whatsoever. That book is fucking, even to this day, like, I recently reread it, like, maybe 3 years ago, and it's still fucking, like, goddamn. Story, you know.
Yeah, the first time I read it, you know, I guess I was 10 or so, and my dad took it away. So I never got to the very end, but I heard that that was no big deal, because I read all the best parts in the 3/4 of the film, of the book. But yeah, he I'll never forget, like, him just giving me a talk of shame, how I wasn't supposed to be reading that book.
Pennywise is the ultimate evil, especially for kids, but, like, he really is, like, he is, like, the Freddy Krueger of a bigger, like, universe, like, ultimate, like, the Deadlights. I mean, that there is just enough to fucking give you chills, like, the fucking
seriously.
Deadlights. Yeah.
All those little micro stories that happened in the past in that book are just haunting, you know? It's such a masterpiece.
It is, yeah. Stephen King is he's a bad man when it comes to making fucking he made. I mean, the universe he's created is insane. Like,
yeah,
still doing it, which is nuts.
And
like,
still doing it.
Good shit. Yeah.
Yeah. I recently, which is crazy. I haven't ever had never read it before, but I recently read On Writing and just finished it. Mm-hmm. And I'm a really slow reader. Like, it took me forever to finish reading it, but it was kind of one of those things where you get a lot of really great nuggets of knowledge in there and things to try to remember when you're writing, you know, whatever it is you're writing. But ultimately, it's just one of those things where you're like, this guy basically came out of the womb writing.
Yeah.
And there's never going to be another one of him. And why even try?
No.
It was kind of one of those feelings where you're just like, oh, this is a true writer. It's honestly a prolific writer, you know.
Yeah, he's something.
Very, very few people can get to that level of, yeah, his amount of discipline in writing. And I don't even know if it's necessarily discipline and work ethic. It's just who he is and what he does, period.
Yeah, this is what he does, and he does it very well.
Yeah. Well, yeah, most of the time. I can't say I love everything he's ever done.
Yeah. But for the most part, like, it's mostly wins and losses with him.
Uh-huh. But it's interesting, too, that he, you know, like you said, he has a universe and some of the things will come up over and over again. But it doesn't matter. You know, it still feels right. It still is like, I don't mind seeing, here we go again with Bangor, Maine and, you know, Indian burial ground. That's OK. I'm good with that.
Yeah, same here. Give me more of that.
Very. Yeah.
All right, so let's go with my number two favorite King adaptation, and that's going to be something we just talked about a little bit. That's going to be the 1990 miniseries It.
Ah, yes.
Yeah.
That's in my honorable mentions as well.
Yeah, the fucking best, and the best portrayal of Pennywise by Tim Curry.
Yeah, you can't top it.
No.
You cannot top it.
Yeah, you can't fuck with Tim Curry. Like,
nope.
He's a fantastic actor. I mean, look at him when he was in Legend playing Darkness.
Oh, my God. Yeah, he's phenomenal. And, yeah, it's one of the best performances of all time, for sure, by far.
Yeah, and it captures the mood from the book. Even though the miniseries wasn't, like, to the book or anything. It was, you know, very similar, but it wasn't to the book. But it captured that mood, that darkness. Yep. It's like, you know.
It really did. And that's difficult. And it really did. Yeah.
Part that really got me too, growing up watching this, was the part where Pennywise's head ended up turning into like a Doberman. You remember the head?
Oh my God.
I was like, yeah. Oh, fuck, a clown with a Doberman head. Oh man.
That's my worst nightmare. I didn't even know it.
You got the little the clown hands and the fucking dog head. Like, oh, who came up with that? That's horrifying.
Right. There's something about it that just makes you feel like deeply disturbed. The fact that it's like these adults that all remember the same horrific thing as kids, you're just like, oh, and they're going to try to come back and fight it. It's like so harrowing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was thinking about too, I was like, oh man, thinking about the 1990 It, and I was like, I miss John Ritter.
Oh,
and I was
wait,
I miss Harry Anderson too. Wait. I miss Jonathan Brandis. All three of those guys are gone.
Yeah.
And that sucks. They weren't even like older, you know, it's just sad. But yeah, three great actors in It no longer with us.
Yeah, it's horrible. The older we get, the, you know, the more we're going to be losing like our like heroes of film and stuff, you know, which is horrible to think about. And it fucking sucks, man.
But same even with, just like, you know, like those three guys weren't even that old, you know, obviously. No. Jonathan Brandis wasn't. So it's also kind of like, you know, just the tragedy. Like yesterday I remembered that Anton Yelchin had passed away.
Oh yeah.
That day, you know, yesterday, you know, I think it was, I don't remember what year it was, but years ago. And I'll never forget that day and just being like, God, horrible loss of talent.
Mm-hmm.
Just for no, you know, just for some senseless random accident.
Right.
You know, just it's so sad.
It is.
Yeah, the last one what's the last like big actor name that really hit you? I think mine might have been Paxton, where I was just like, no.
Oh, Paxton was heavy.
That was heavy.
Yeah, he was a great actor. And there was somebody recently that passed away that really got me too. I'm just having a kind of a little bit of foggy brain here trying to think, because there's a lot of people that passed away that kind of impact me, you know what I mean? So
yeah. Was it Bob Saget?
No, not really, but it was sad though, because I
it was sad because it didn't need to happen. Yeah.
And they said he died of a concussion, they found out, supposedly.
Yep.
That's fucking crazy. Remember, you always were told you get hit in the head, don't go to sleep. Like, I guess that shit was true. Like, I didn't believe when I was a kid, I'm always hitting my fucking head.
I feel like men are more prone to die from things like that because, you know, guys try to stick it out. Or let me just say, because it's 2022, masculine energies are more prone to fucking get knocked on the head to where you probably hear your skull crack and then not go to the emergency room. Let me just go to sleep forever.
I've had a limb hit me in the head not too long ago at work. I was cutting something. It wasn't a big limb, but it was enough to jar me a little bit. And I just kept on going, you know. Only time I've been to the hospital, I had to get some stitches when I cut through my knee with a pair of industrial-sized hedge trimmers.
Jesus.
I couldn't walk that off. I had to get like 10 stitches and play a show that night.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Staples are coming out.
Bob Saget also, he could have just been really dazed. So I'm going to give him some credit, you know, like what if he just really didn't even know what was going on?
Right.
And laid down and that was it. So who knows?
Yeah,
so,
who knows?
All I know is if I'm conscious and I just fell, I would just go to the ER right away.
Yeah, better be on the safe side.
I don't know. If I hear my skull crack, I think it's... Beyond the safe side.
Yeah, you might want to go. You might want to call EMS to come get you, too. I wouldn't drive. You know?
Yeah, call an Uber to the ER. Yeah.
Yeah, they'd do that. All right, so my least favorite number two, I think did I already say this? No, I didn't. It's actually the Stan 2020 TV show. That was my number two least favorite.
Oh, yeah. We went over that one because I have that on there, too.
Yeah, so I agree with everything you said about it. Like, it just the only thing that's worth a shit was Skarsgård to a point. But yeah, that's about it. I can say about that. It's horrible.
I don't have any more least favorites. Do you have another one like your top?
Yeah, I'll go ahead and throw my top least favorite. And this might be a lot of people's least favorite. It was the Tommyknockers TV miniseries that came out in the '90s.
Yeah, that's a good call.
Yeah. I don't even really like the book too much. Like, the book's all right, but it's pretty dry. And then, you know, the miniseries was pretty dry. And I liked a lot of those miniseries that came around that time. So, you know, Stephen King stuff, but this is definitely my least favorite, probably my least favorite Stephen King. It's tied, though, with the, like I said, the Stan TV show that just came out. They're tied for kind of number one and two. So you can kind of throw them either way. So, but yeah, I just didn't like it. It didn't do anything for me. I didn't like none of the characters and, the whole aliens thing was kind of like,
I get that one mixed up with the Langoliers.
Yeah, I don't mind the Langoliers, actually. But they had horrible special effects. Even back then, like, the Langoliers were so horrible looking. You know, storyline's fucking cool as shit. Like, you're eating reality and stuff, but, you know, resetting reality. But the way they looked, it was just, they're giant balls of, like, CGI fuzz, you know? With, like, these crazy weird teeth that you can tell were super fake.
Yeah.
So that is my my top of the least. So I guess we're going to your, is it number two of your favorite? Do you have a number two and one?
So I have a number one, and it's a definite number one, and then I have like just a handful of honorable mentions that I just, do you mind if I just like speed through those?
Yeah, hit them out.
Say what they are and why.
Yep.
So it's Dead Zone because of Christopher Walken and Cronenberg. Good book too. Cujo is really good. Like the performances I thought are great. Dee Wallace and little kid from Who's the Boss. Danny Pintaro, amazing performances. And then Children of the Corn was probably the first horror movie I ever saw, like, and I wasn't supposed to, you know? So it kind of have a soft spot for that. I also have a soft spot for The Lawnmower Man, even though it's it's bad in a good way. And I love Pierce Brosnan and Jeff Fahey. We already mentioned Silver Bullet. Running Man, one of those Bachman stories. Yeah. Really fun, entertaining, action sci-fi. Love The Running Man. And I liked the TV, I think it was a film, I don't think it was a, well, maybe it was a series, but Desperation, I want to mention because it was filmed here in Tucson. And my friend Michael Peterson was a makeup artist on it and taught me what I know about makeup. So I think that's pretty neat. So those are my honorable mentions.
Those are good ones. I like Desperation. I also like the book too. The book is really cool.
Oh yeah. I haven't read the book.
Yeah. It's long as hell. Of course, a lot of Stephen King stuff is super long, but this one is extra long. I think I did the audio book and it was like 25 hours, I think, or something like that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Well, I'm listening to one now that's 35 hours. It's called Carrying Comfort, I believe.
Oh, Carrying Comfort. I remember that one. Yeah.
Psychic Vampires. It's all right. It's a little dry for me. It's so goddamn long, but I'm because I don't want to stop now. I'm already like fucking 10 hours in. So.
Yeah, that's too much to just stop now.
Yeah. But my number one of Stephen King adaptions is the 1994 miniseries The Stand by the great Mick Garris.
Ah, yes.
Fucking
that one has Joe Bob in it too, right?
Yeah, I think a scene got cut out though, if I'm not mistaken. Oh. I'm not 100% sure. He still might be in there. I think he was in the casino scene or something that was in there.
That's funny.
I can remember it being in there, though, so it might still be there. But I've also heard it was cut out. I need to rewatch that again and see, just to see Joe Bob, you know?
I do, too. I'm kind of like, it's been a while since I watched. Yeah, the Stand miniseries was so much better than the new one.
Oh, man, like miles and miles than the new one. Told Mick Garris that. I talked to Mick last weekend or weekend before last. I was talking to Mick on here and stuff. I was like, yeah, the new Stand. It's like, I didn't like that very much. So your Stand is way better.
For sure.
He didn't want to say like, oh yeah, that new one. You can tell he knew the new one wasn't very good, you know?
Yeah. Also, his miniseries for The Shining was really good too. Like, you know, we were talking earlier about sticking close to the book, but it really did. Like, I enjoyed seeing a different version of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
that one also Weber's great. What's that?
Yeah, Stephen Weber is great. I'm glad that you know.
Yeah, and that scene, the ghost in the tub, really got me. And you know, in his Shining TV series, I think I think that one was scarier than fucking, you know, the Kubrick one to me.
Anyway. Oh yeah, funny.
And if I'm not mistaken, that was Mick Garris's wife that played that part in his.
Oh really? Wow.
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure, but I'm like at least 90% sure it was. I think. Jeez.
That sounds like a fun thing to film.
Yeah. But yeah, his Stand holds up. Like, I got a special edition Blu-ray they just released a few years ago and stuff, and just it looks better, you know, it's like in 4K or whatever and stuff. But
oh, cool.
It's still fucking great. And like, you know, that's how the Stand is when I see it in my head after, you know, reading. I've read the Stand a couple of times, and I get that same feeling as I got from the book watching his miniseries, you know.
Uh-huh. That's what you want. Yeah.
So he makes a TV show look like total crap.
Definitely.
Yeah. So, cool. Well, that was some good list there of stuff we don't like and stuff we do like. And I think we kind of like went across the whole spectrum of like kind of deep dives of main stuff.
I didn't tell you my number one.
I thought you did.
No, I named honorable mentions, but I didn't get number one. I also have a couple film series that I wanted to mention too, and then I'll tell you my number one.
Okay, let's go for it. Yeah.
Okay, Gerald's Game, they're both Netflix. Gerald's Game I thought was really, really good, and that glove degloving scene from I honestly felt like I was gonna faint. I've never felt that before watching a movie. And I was laying down. So that says like a lot, I think. But I thought that was great, and also In the Tall Grass. I thought it was really well done. I thought the performances were great and they did a good job with the source material.
You read a short story on that?
Yeah.
Brutal on that ending. Mm-hmm.
So speaking of endings, my number one Stephen King adaptation film is The Mist.
Oh, good one. Hell yeah.
High and Far. Yeah. Directed and a screenplay written by Frank Darabont. That ending is what makes it, you know, it's so haunting and just like that Dead Can Dance song playing and talk about bad timing, you know, it's just so tragic and sad and visceral. And it's stayed with me, you know, from the first time I saw that, I was just so like disturbed and shocked. And I like getting a lot of like impactful, you know, I love to feel emotions evoked for me from film. And that one definitely does it. And I would say the black and white version, I actually really like even more than the color. It just works so much better with the creatures. And gives it that kind of like B movie quality, which is fun. But I rarely prefer a black and white version, but this is the exception.
Yeah, it totally works with The Mist. I think that's how it should have been, I guess, to begin with. But
I was reading that he had like a decent budget, but they were going to give him more money if he agreed to change the ending to something more cheerful. And he was like, no. Which is so Frank Darabont, you know, but I feel like he's like my idol. Like he just does what he wants and says, fuck it. I know what I'm doing. So I just love that he wanted it ultimately to have that ending and stuck with it and said, I don't need more money.
Yeah, it ended with a bang, yeah. Right?
Yeah, like what, five bangs?
Yeah. So dark and like, oh yeah, they're gonna get away. Cool, yeah, they're seeing the light of day here. And no, that's not how that happened. I was like, what the fuck? I was like, I didn't see that coming.
No, it's so effective. But yeah, that's why The Mist is my top.
Nice, that's a good one. And also captures that Lovecraft feeling too. Like that's a very Lovecraftian film, like big time, you know. And
that's true.
Giant tentacle monsters. That's like a fear of mine, saying like, what if there is another dimension and we rip a hole in there trying to figure out like new weaponry and shit, and we unleash fucking Cthulhu like creatures onto the earth. Like, fuck that, man, you know.
Is it the tentacles?
What's that?
Or is it the tentacles that bother you?
This dealing with giant creatures, I think the flying ones would be the worst for me. Like those flying things are horrible. Like harder to get away from too, you know.
I understand. That reminds me, season two of Raised by Wolves has some really cool, unique creatures that are pretty terrifying.
I'm on the first episode of that, and I haven't went back to it yet for some reason, because there's so many fucking shows to watch. Yeah, I'm going to go back to those. I love the first season, and I'm on this first season. First episode of the second season. And
gotcha.
I need to go back to it. I got sidetracked on something else.
And you're watching From? Also?
I am. I caught up with From.
Very Stephen Kingy.
Yesterday. What's that?
It's very Stephen Kingy.
It is. It does feel Stephen Kingy. I don't. Some of the like a lot of the characters, like the interaction with the characters, is a little kind of weak to me right now. Like,
yeah.
I want to see more of these fucking creatures in the woods, and when I want to see more of them, they're like, oh well, why don't you want to love me? You know, the husband. Right. All right, this is cool. Let's go back to other shit. Now, how about that little boy in the woods? Let's see what he's got going on. You know, how about the crazy guy with the lunchbox? I want to hear.
Oh, that guy's great. He reminds me of like Lux Interior. He's so cool and weird and tall and dark and everything. But,
yeah.
I agree. I can't stand the entire family in the RV. But the show is really good. The sheriff is great. Some of the other characters are really fun. But that RV family, I hope that they just all get killed.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I don't see that happen. And they're going to be part of the heroes.
That little boy in the RV family is so Canadian. It's hilarious. Like his accent is so strong. I'm like, how did that happen? Your dad's American, your mother is like Spanish American, and then you are over here like with this super strong Canadian accent. It's hilarious.
Yeah, I noticed. I'm like, something's a little off about his voice there, and like that makes sense now, Canadian. Yeah.
Yeah, I had to look him up. I was like, oh yeah, he's Canadian.
But overall, like as of right now, I'm giving it like an 8 out of 10, which I like it. You know, it just hasn't really caught me yet, but I think it's going in that direction. You know.
Yeah, it's got like things you've seen before, but not in this way. So it's kind of like, are they like zombies? No, not quite. They're monsters, but like we don't know yet what exactly they are. So it's in that way, it's kind of new and fresh, and I appreciate that.
And I'm really hoping they're not ghosts, because that shit's. don't be ghosts, because that's so predictable. Be something else. Be some kind of crazy ass fucking creature type things in the end. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. That little kid, this little cute kid in horror is out there in the woods, and he'll have the key.
Yeah, and the kid all in dressed in white, I think he's like the key to all this too. I think he's like the head.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah. I'm hoping
he looks like
that goes.
Looks like he has a little tennis outfit on or something. Yeah. I thought he was the same exact kid as the kid on the RV at first.
I thought so too. When he first got stabbed, and well, I mean, we got the whatchamacallit through his leg, and he saw the boy there for the first time. I think he saw him. Yeah, he saw him then.
Yeah.
I thought it was
him. Yeah, I thought he saw himself.
Yeah. So that's got a little weird, but yeah, uh-huh. There's a little bit different now. You can see the differences, but it's catching me. It's getting there. It's growing on me. I didn't like.
Yeah.
I watched, it took me a whole week to get through the 5 episodes. I was doing like one a night or something like that, you know, but.
Mm-hmm.
There's another one too. Actually, you gotta get the iTunes movie thing. You gotta get Apple TV.
Gotta figure that out.
It's $3 a month, by the way. So you just
got
Roku. There's an app that says Apple TV. Just download that, and it's like $3.
And well, how much is Roku? I gotta spend all this money just to get
What do you use for your streaming?
I just use Google Chrome off my phone. I have an Android.
Oh shit! You should be able to go to the App Store and find it's Android, I don't know if they're going to communicate.
I tried it, and that app didn't work at all, so shit. I don't know what's going on. But I want to watch something called The Foundation, so.
Yeah, that's on there, and there's another one called The Servant, which is new M. Night Shyamalan TV show, which is actually really fucking good.
Oh, okay.
It's called Servant. Yeah, that one's on the like third or fourth season. It's a slow burn, but... Yeah, I still don't know what the fuck is going on after 3 or 4 seasons. Like, I'm starting to finally unravel a bit more. It's real slow, but it's really good and like keeps you guessing like what's going on here because you don't fucking know. But
yeah, he does that and then he disappoints you. So I'm just a little bit not sure.
Well, I recommend this one. I think you'll dig
it.
It's really good. It's some of his best work. And there's another one. It's called shit. It's a new one. I'm trying to look up the name of it right now. I think it's called Severance. Yeah, it's called Severance. Have you heard of that one?
No.
All right. It's a bit of a dark comedy somewhat. There's a little bit of comedy in there, but it's mostly sci-fi horror.
Nice.
You were able to separate your work self from your home self. Well, in this timeline, they're able to do that. It's called Severance is the name of the process, and it pretty much severs your mind from home to work. So if you're at work, when you punch out and go down the elevator or up the elevator, you forget everything you did at work that day. So when you're at home, you don't know shit that you did at work. You know what I mean?
That doesn't sound that different from my regular life.
But that one's really good. And
that looks good. Yeah, I'm looking it up. I like Adam Scott. And Patricia Arquette. That looks cool.
Yeah, Patricia Arquette's awesome. She liked one of my tweets when I said I liked the show, so that was pretty cool. Famous now.
You had a good day that day.
Yeah. I love when celebrities do that. Like, holy shit. Like, creator of What We Do in Shadows retweeted me. He's like, oh, Horrible 666 says that's good. It must be good. I'm like, holy shit.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I like when shit like that happens. But yeah, those two shows are like highly recommended for me. Like both of them.
I've tried Apple and just haven't gotten pulled over because I like all the customization of Android. But they've got so many good shows. Even like that, was it called Ted Blasco? I want to watch that too.
I've heard that was good. Yeah, I haven't checked that out yet.
Yeah. So, but yeah, I'm not seeing in the app store on Google that it's available. I don't know what. I'll figure it out. I'm missing
Roku too many right good now. Things. They're like $20 off Amazon if you get a Roku, and then Roku's free. You just got to buy the actual device and it plugs into your HDMI, and then you can download a Roku app on your phone, and then you could like fucking it'd be on your TV. As soon as you plug that thing in, it'd be like a whole new interface for your smart TV, and it'd be the Roku app, so you have all that shit there. So
I'm gonna do that. I tried Fire TV and it stopped working for some reason.
Yeah,
thanks Amazon.
TV. I tried all of them, and Roku's like the top one, and it also streams Joe Bob the best. Like,
oh, yeah?
Trouble streaming Joe Bob on Shudder because they either go out on them or whatever, and like Roku is the best one to do that. Like, it never goes out. So,
all right. So now you have a sponsor.
I wish. I want Shudder to be a sponsor. So if they're listening from Shudder,
If they're listening, if they don't, then maybe you could go over to Screenbox.
I just tried. I did the 7-day free trial just to watch the old Nightmare on Elm Street TV series from back when I was a kid. Uh-huh. It's pretty good, but they got a lot of. They got a very similar selection to Shudder. You know?
Do they?
Yeah.
I haven't checked it out yet. I did download it, and I for the same reason I wanted to watch the Nightmare on Elm Street series because it's been a while, obviously. But I was like, I don't know. I didn't. It's, for me, it's a little bit difficult to find, like even what movies are on Shudder, even though I have it, because I have it on Amazon. I used to use the app, changed over to Amazon. It's just like not set up in a way on Amazon where you can easily find. You know, I don't know what's up with that.
Amazon does that a lot with their streaming channels. I noticed, like, probably do the same with, you know, Scream TV. But so far with Scream TV, Nightmare on Elm Street is really cool. And I hear they're going to be doing more like original stuff from, because I think either Bloody Disgusting owns them now, I believe. And so they're supposed to be doing more with it from what I hear. So I'll probably come back to it once more shit gets going. As of right now, like, there's nothing really there for me. So, you know, because I've seen it all already. And like most Shudder has most of the stuff to have on there. So,
yeah,
you know,
it looks like Screambox is going to have an original documentary about Pennywise, the story of It. That's cool. Oh,
yeah, that is cool. And I've been hearing good things that they're going to be starting to do like more shit, being that they're under different ownership now, because they've been out for a little while. But, you know,
I see. Yeah, definitely. It's Bloody Disgusting that's taken them up.
So
that's cool. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, more horror, the better, you know.
I agree. Yeah.
I've only got 50 streaming services already. I'm not at 51.
I want them all. I have no problem with having like a ton of apps. No,
I have so many. I don't even remember half the ones I have. And then I go back. If I'm not using that app, I just go ahead and, like, you know, de-describe from it or whatever, like unsubscribe the fucking thing. Then come back a month later and fucking subscribe again because there's new shows on there that I got to see. You know, like,
yep, I'm the same.
Again.
The only one that I might stay unsubscribed from that I'm on and off with is Criterion, because I'm always like, oh, I'm an intellectual, I do want to see all of these films on Criterion. And then when I actually get down to it, I'm like, I don't feel like it. I'm not in the mood for these really like amazing classic independent films. I don't know. My brain thinks it's smarter than it is. But when I get on Criterion, I'm just like, shit. This is some heavy stuff to sit down and watch.
I haven't
Altman,
done that one.
I don't know if I can handle some Altman films. It's a lot for my brain to compute.
I can recommend another one that you probably already have, but do you have Arrow Player?
No, I do have the Full Moon app, but Arrow, that's a good call.
Yeah, Arrow is fucking awesome, because the cool thing with what they do with their releases on there, they actually include like all the special features on there, like you would on a Blu-ray.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I think that's a nice small little touch, and they got a lot of like weird shit that they got curated on there, you know, like a lot of stuff you're not gonna find anywhere. And they got great transfers of it too, like fucking 4K, like it looks really good. Like, I love Arrow. Arrow and Shudder are my favorites.
Yeah. All right. I'm convinced. I'm downloading it now.
Nice. Add that to number 51 for you too, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, now I'm seeing a bunch more I wanna kinda download, but I'm not gonna.
Yeah, they say it's cheaper when you cut cable. I can tell you it probably ain't really.
I don't think so. I don't really remember how much cable costs, but it's definitely not cheaper.
Yeah, I haven't had cable in like freaking 20 years, so.
Yeah. It's weird to me when I know someone that still has it. I'm like, what are you doing? And they just watch like old shows from like the 60s, you know. I'm like, why do you have it? Like, you just don't like TV, do you? You don't like movies. That's why you have cable.
That's my parents. They just told me they were complaining to me that they had a $300 cable bill. I'm like, $300 fucking dollars? Like, what do y'all want? Well, we just rented a few movies off of there. I'm like, why? As I dad, all I can do is fucking get internet, which you already have, and then Netflix. Like, that's all you need for stuff you watch, you know?
Yeah. My friend buys DVDs like crazy. He has a massive, like, seriously, like, video store size amount of DVDs in his apartment now. Like, he could definitely open up a rental store. And he's always buying them. Like, every time we go to the bookstore, there's just more and more DVDs, and doesn't have a single app. No Netflix, no Disney Plus, none of that. And I think that's so weird. I'm just like, what are you doing? Like, how
it's the total opposite of everything.
Can you stand your life? Yeah, and then, you know, he likes Marvel stuff. He likes the Disney Plus Star Wars stuff that comes out, but I don't know. Like, I think there's some people that are just a little bit anti-technology and will stay that way.
I mean, we need those types too, you know. It balances everything out, I think. And I love physical media too, but I go crazy sometimes on like special edition shit, especially special edition VHSs and stuff that are coming out now. Like,
oh, no.
God, I love those. I don't even fucking play them because I don't want my VHS player to eat them up, so... they're like pristine, and then their original casing and stuff like that, you know, but I have to own it. I want it. I have to have it, you know?
Yep. I'm like that with t-shirts and then little like doll things, like any kind of figures. You know, if it's related to Universal Monsters, Dracula, Suspiria, or not Suspiria, Subspecies, you know, I'm definitely going to get it.
Yeah, I saw those cards you posted of the Subspecies stuff. I think it was a Full Moon card deck or something. No, it was cool as shit.
Yeah, there's this weird little random toy store here, and the guy has an entire box full of those packs. And I think they're all just the same. That's why, you know, I just got like three.
Mm-hmm.
But he was only selling them like, well, actually, they weren't cheap. They were like $8 each, you know, for like five cards, $4 a card. But they're unique, you know.
Yeah.
But he didn't even know what they were. He was just like, I don't know. Like, this is cool, dude. Yeah. I love
vampire films ever made. All of them. I like all of them, so they're all cool.
I do too.
Them, right?
Yeah.
Or five.
I'm not sure. I wonder if they're all like filmed out there in the same. Is it Romania? The same place. But I just fell in love with them and never went back. And I just think they're great. And they don't lose like anything over time to me.
No. And was it the main vampire Radu?
Radu, yeah.
Yeah, his fucking fingers, man. No, it's so creepy. Like, I just remember that as a kid. Like, those long-ass creepy fingers of his. That could turn into, like, little gargoyle things if they're fucking cut off.
He's a cool character. He's a, like, little mix of different vampires and you know, but his own thing. So I always liked that and thought that character was fun. And it's definitely got that Full Moon 80s feel or 90s feel, early 90s, which also feels 80s to me, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It has that quality about it. Like, I don't like a ton of 90s horror, but definitely these films qualify as good 90s.
Yeah, most definitely.
Yeah.
And on a collectible front or whatever, I'm obsessed with anything Mandy. So I know you saw that post.
Oh, me too.
I got a fucking miniature fucking axe. It was smaller than I thought it was going to be. I thought it was going to be bigger. It says 16 inches. I'm like, this is like more 12 or so, but okay, it's still cool as fuck. So,
that's a good size. It's like a pickaxe.
Yeah, you could use it one-handed if you want to, if you got to take somebody out, you know.
Like a tomahawk?
Yeah. It works great as that. And you can actually sharpen it. It even says on a website, if you wanted to, you can sharpen these.
Oh, that's really cool. Yeah. If I had more money, you know, I'd love the full-size one.
Oh,
a friend of mine like made one, you know, like out of like, I think sort of like the form building stuff that you could just like cut out shapes and I think it's kind of like a styrofoam base. I don't know how to describe it, but a lot of like cosplayers use that for armor and stuff.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. That would be cool and a lot lighter too.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, a lot lighter. Yeah. He made one of those. Looked really good.
Yeah.
That's such a great example of like how to do a horror film well by putting a ton of like weird merchandisable items and characters in it.
Yeah.
Because like when you compare, like, for instance, two great films that we both really enjoyed, Mandy and Pig.
Yes.
They're very different, but I'm not going to go buy any like a truffle pig doll, you know.
Right. Yeah, there's no merch in that you can really get.
Yeah, there's no merch. There's but with Mandy, it's massive amounts of merch, and you want to be associated with that merch, you know. It makes you like, you know, like part of this like cult classic fandom. But that's another thing I love about like horror community is that like just the merch.
Yeah.
All the cool merch and the iconic things that make you like go even more crazy about a movie for like years and years and years, you know.
Yep, I've spent so much money on Mandy. Like, since Mandy's come out, I've been on it the whole time. Whenever Spectre Vision or whatever release anything new on Mandy or Legion, they got something new. I'm like, oh man, I got to get that. How much is that? I can swing that. I was so close to buying that full size axe. I was so close, but I saw shipping was like $100. I'm like, I can't fucking spend $500 on this thing. I want to so bad.
Yeah.
I was like, then the miniature one was there. I was like, oh, $60. That's a fucking steal. I'm getting.
Yeah.
I was like, fuck it.
I don't mind that at all. That's one money well spent. You know, I trick myself by putting my purchases in PayPal and doing the four payments.
I've seen that.
Away. It's so ghetto.
I need to try that actually, because there's more shit I want to buy, of course. But
it's dangerous.
Yeah.
You saw those cassettes that I have, right? The Mandy ones. I haven't even taken them out or anything.
The cassettes? I don't think I've seen the cassettes, no.
I have these two really cool... they're Mandy soundtrack cassettes, and Let me see if I can like find any information on them. They're like super rare. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so the covers were like VHS style, and mm-hmm. I have one. It has like this, what is it called? The serpent like fake book cover, and the other one is just like the the Lenora Tor Seeker of the Serpent's Eye cover.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they were put out by, let's see, they have digital albums on them apparently. I haven't even like opened them. But oh yeah, they only had 50 copies of them. And yeah, if you go to mandysoundtrack.bandcamp.com, that's where you can find out where those are.
No but, shit, yeah. I didn't know about those. Okay, those kind of threw me. I got
they're
hit.
Really cool. It's yeah, they're sold out. But yeah, I actually one of my friends is the owner of Redbird Music,
mm-hmm.
and was basically still in depth the manager for Johan Johansson's library.
Oh, that's
and
cool.
He has some like various Johan Johansson merchandise and stuff, of course. But yeah, he sent me these, and I was like, holy shit. These are like the coolest things I have.
That's way
better. Ever have.
I keep those things in like glass or something.
Yeah, they're really neat. I'll like put a picture on my Instagram of them or something. But yeah, that's from the moment I saw that film, I was like, well, this is going to be one of my favorite movies of all time. And it is.
Yep. That's the same thing that happened with me first watch, like halfway through that movie. It's like, what the fuck am I watching? It's like the best shit ever. I was like, holy fuck. I was like, I just felt it. I'm like, whoa, this is everything I love in film.
For sure. Yeah. And you're also a fan of like Nicholas Winding Refn films too, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
I love that.
Same kind of feeling I get when I watch his movies where I'm just like, okay, this is going to be one of my favorite things ever. He just like knocked everything out of the park.
It did, and it's made like everything else I've watched horror-wise. Like it doesn't add up to Mandy. Like, I know it's totally different, but still, Mandy's ruined every fucking horror film for me since Mandy. I'm like, man.
Someone was asking me the other day if Panos Cosmatos was up to anything new, and I haven't seen anything. Have you?
I've heard some things. Yeah. Just some rumors here and there because he stays quiet. I've been trying to get an interview with him for a while now, but you can't just reach out to him like that. He's not available like that. You know what I mean? Hard to reach. But
I've
heard like there's things in the works. So he's probably working as we speak, and it's going to pop up with something badass here this year or next year. You know what I mean?
I love the idea of just all of a sudden just something comes out. I mean, from Beyond the Black Rainbow to Mandy, that was 8 years.
Mm-hmm. And it makes sense. So how long has it been since Mandy's been out? What?
2018 is when it came out.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's just undercover over there. I don't see anything, but like you said, it could be like completely unknown and he could be up to something.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I know that when he'd asked for Johan Johansson to do the score, and you know, he didn't have a lot of money, and Johan Johansson loved Beyond the Black Rainbow, and he was like, you don't have to pay me, and here's some money to finish Mandy, which is amazing. Like that's so cool.
Yeah, so you know? Cool. And it kind of got Nicolas Cage rolling again, you know, kind of set him up. Like he's been fucking going strong since Mandy again, you know, which is great.
Yeah, I feel like he's done some pretty good stuff prior to Mandy, but not, I know what you mean. It was like then it was kind of like, oh shit, he's back. Yeah.
Like the fire's lit, you know. It's like, all right, Nicolas Cage needs to be in this. He's in this. I mean, some of the shit he's still in ain't that great, but that's not his fault, you know. If you use Nicolas Cage right, put him in the right role, he's fucking amazing. One of the best actors ever, you know.
And Pig is a perfect example of that.
Yeah.
Like if anyone has any doubt that he's not a great actor, watch Pig, and you'll be reminded he's a great actor. In the right hands, holy shit, it's such a touching movie.
That ending was so damn sad. You know,
all of it was sad. It's such a weird movie, and it was just like so beautifully done and written and just came out of nowhere. And I was like, what is this? It's such a weird story, you know?
Right. And it was filmed like a horror movie. The way it looked just like a horror movie, but there was no horror whatsoever in there. And it also like somebody was telling me, it's the John Wick of food movies or some shit. I'm like, I don't see that either. There's no fucking violence in this movie. except for
anyone
the fighting
that
thing.
Says that it's a John Wick type film hasn't really watched it, I think. Exactly. You know,
yeah,
it really is not like John Wick whatsoever. I mean, there's okay, so he's getting revenge for beloved pet, but it's really not the same at all. It's not like the whole film is like just revenge. It's like really beautiful, kind of intricate storylines that weave in and out, you know, with mm-hmm. Alex Wolff too. His character's great, and hadn't seen him since what, Hereditary, I think.
Oh yeah.
He was great, and Adam Arkin was amazing. Like, yeah, it was very unexpectedly touching. And yeah, you know, like I watched it myself. I just went down to the Loft, which is our like art house film theater here, and I was sitting there, and it was like a rainy day, and I was like, what is this salty discharge coming out of my eyes? You know, it was just so moving and beautiful too, the setting and everything. But yeah, in fact, it's weird because I do think of it as a horror film for some reason.
Yeah, it has that feeling.
It's really not. But
like, this looks like it, you know, like it feels like there's something coming. There's something coming. It never comes. But you know what I mean? Like, is he going to grab a chainsaw and fucking go crazy on these guys? No. Like, you know, some cooking shit and go crazy. It never happens. But it's its own
thing. I would say psychologically, I was horrified.
Yeah.
You know, being an animal lover, too, you just can't help but feel horrible.
That's what got me. That's like if somebody kidnapped one of our cats. Like, I can only fucking I couldn't take that shit.
Yeah, I was like, all right, well, these people need to pay. You cannot go and take somebody's precious, you know, pet. And that, when he said, like, the character, what was his name? It's Alex Garland's character, when he was like, well, why are you doing all this? And Nicolas Cage, he's just like, because I love her. I thought that was such a good little simple line. You know, I was just like, oh my God.
Yeah.
He loved her. He loved that little pig. And plus, you know that he's also hurting from the death of like his wife. I'm assuming it was a spouse, you know, but he's hurting and mourning. And that pig is all he has.
Yeah.
It's the only thing he cares about. You know,
it's like he put the love that he had for his wife and all into this pig, you know, it's like kind of the physical embodiment of it, sort of, you know what I mean? Like, this is all he loves now because, you know,
And animals are pure love. They're just innocent, you know? So thinking about like there's so many layers to the movie, really, you know, and I did not know anything about it going in. So when I started getting into his backstory, I was just like, whoa, I'm impressed. There's like some Fight Club stuff going on for some reason. And then you know, the chef stuff, and then that really badass speech when he sits down at that restaurant and oh my God, that was amazing.
The revenge speech, you know what I mean?
Yes. And just like that actor and his expressions. Oh my God. He was amazing.
He's like, he'd have to beat you with punches. He doesn't beat you with what he just said.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, great movie. So, yeah,
I'm looking forward to whatever that team of writers do next. It's written by Michael Sarnowski and Vanessa Block. And I think they just won like Best Original Script at the Independent Film Awards, maybe? Maybe I'm crazy. I thought I read that and I was like, hell yeah, that was.
Yeah, they need all the awards they can get.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah.
Don't disappear off the map just because it's hard.
That was my favorite film of last year. It did come out last year, right? It's hard to get to the years right anymore because they just meld into one. I think it was last year, right?
Yeah, it was just last year.
That was my overall favorite film when I did my like top 9 or top 10 or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
Like, not
hard,
but this is my fucking favorite film. It's better than everything that came out.
That's right, because I remember asking, like, because you did horror, and I was like, why isn't Pig here? And you're like, well, it's not really horror. I'm like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's it kind of is. I feel category. Like this, but, you know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. What does it say? 2022 Film Independent Spirit Awards. I think that might have been I don't know. I thought I read that he got an award for Pig.
Well,
there's a lot of great just like movies and shows that were recognized in the Spirit Awards. I like kind of like Spirit Awards, SAG Awards, Globes better than the Oscars.
Mm-hmm. Get more recognition for, I think, better films too. Like Oscars are kind of like, you know what they're going to be. Like the biggest budget World War II movie or whatever. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
Yeah.
Oh, I found it. Best first screenplay. Like, that's their first screenplay, you know? That's really impressive to, yeah. like, at least got that got produced. I'm assuming that's what that means. Like, not their first ever written, but yeah. that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, super
really
good.
Hard to write a screenplay, so...
Never tried it, but I do write short stories when I'm in the mood. Like, I like writing short stories, never done a screenplay or anything like that, but I know what I need. Yeah.
It's a whole different beast. You know, like, any kind of writing is difficult, I think. But yeah, there's rules, and then there's things to do to get around the rules, and then there's a ton of things to learn just about storytelling in general, for any writer, I would say. It's just really, it's just taxing and difficult, and a lot of like labor for one's brain, and it gets harrowing after a while. But you know, trying not to think about it that way, if you are ever thinking about writing, you know, like a novel or a screenplay, well, if you have a bunch of short stories, you could do an anthology. That would be awesome.
Yeah, that's what's in the back of my head. I have so many projects going on right now I want to do. Like, I'm also doing like a synthwave thing. I got 4 songs already done.
Cool.
I'm going to get like 8 of them up this year and put them on Bandcamp. Because I've done metal all my life. Like, and I also love synth and dark, like atmospheric shit like that. So like, I'm going to do a fucking synthwave album. And I'm 4 songs in. And I'm beginning to reviews from some of my friends that, you know, will tell you if it sucks or not. So working on that. I've been working on like the short story stuff for a while too, like a couple of years now. It's been kind of on the back burner. I just write when I'm motivated, you know?
Yeah.
So, and I got a few good ones, I think. I mean, Daniel Noah from Spectre Vision, like my cat horror story that I have is a short story. And I can send you too if you want to check it out. He said, man, this made me look at my cats totally different. I'm like, cool. That's a good thing.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
So yeah. I was looking around at some horror books yesterday, and I was like, you know what horror writer I really like? Because I just saw some of his novels, and it's been a while. Is Edward Lee. Do you ever read anything by him?
I have not, no.
Check some of his stuff out. He's written several short stories, but also some novels. Kind of like some splatterpunk stuff, too. But his writing is like really like descriptive and visceral and can be gory. He did have one of his shorts was made into a film. I think it was just like a kind of small independent film.
Mm-hmm.
But he's a great writer. And then also I love Richard Layman, and he's deceased, but he wrote a ton of great books, horror books.
Yeah, I haven't read him either. I've heard of him, but it's hard for me to get away from Stephen King and Clive Barker. Like,
yeah.
Like, I read so much of their stuff. Like, and you know, I go back to Lovecraft every once in a while too. Uh-huh. You know, I try to veer off to some new people, but I usually go back to fucking King because he has so much stuff to still read that I haven't read yet. So.
Oh yeah.
You know.
If you like, you know, because I like those two writers as well. But if you end up like deciding someone else, maybe we'll be changed. Yeah, definitely check out Edward Lee and Richard Layman.
Okay, most definitely. Yeah. I'll make a note of that.
Yeah. Richard Layman just had a ton of stuff before he died still out there. And it looks like Edward Lee is still publishing. Seems like he had something a few years ago come out. But yeah, you might really like his stuff.
Okay. Oh, I appreciate and they're just, like, the recommendation.
Fun. Yeah. They're there's fun. So many.
It's fun. Yeah. I need something that's not super dry, like what audiobook I'm reading right now. Like I told you, is really dry. I need something to kind of change it up a little bit. So that sounds good.
Yeah. Yeah. His stuff is like, it's also kind of like unexpected and quirky where you're just like, what did I have to like read that sentence again? Make sure I read that correctly.
Killer.
Yeah. Good stuff. And same with Craig Zahler. He has some novels that are, they're not necessarily like, horror, but like maybe Western horror, and I would really like his writing.
Okay, I'll probably have to have you send me some of these just for that way I don't forget. So,
yeah, I like reading his scripts too, as Craig Zahler.
Cool. I love the recommendations on the authors because there's a ton of them out there, and it gets a little like I'm like I don't even know what the hell this is.
He was he wrote Bone Tomahawk and Dragged Across Concrete.
Oh, nice. I like both those films, yep.
Good stuff.
Mm-hmm. Did he do whatchamacallit, Cell Block? What's the name of that movie?
Brawl and Cell Block 99. Yeah.
Did he do that one too?
Yeah. Okay. He Brawl and Cell Block 99. Yep. He wrote it and directed it.
Oh man, yeah, that's a brutal fucking movie. I love that movie.
Yeah, that's That's the kind of writing I like. It's just sharp and crisp and like really like impactful, you know, just where you're like, holy shit, this is violent but cool, you know, at the same time. And kind of weird too.
Yeah, definitely weird.
Mm-hmm.
And all three films have that same, like, they can all take place almost in the same type of universe, even though it's different times, but, you know, has that, they all have that same feeling. Real gritty, like super gritty, dark. Yeah.
Yeah. I think maybe Shot Caller might be one of his. I don't remember, actually. I'm not sure. Don't quote me on that one.
If I'm not mistaken, I think that guy, did he direct it too or no? Did he direct all three of those films as well, or he just wrote them all?
Let's see. I know that he definitely directed, Brawl, but then like, he's mostly a writer.
Okay. So I thought it was the same fellow. He's also a drummer in a black metal band, and I'm not sure if that's the same person.
I think he doesn't look like it.
Okay. This might be the different band, but associated with like drummer in a black metal band.
You know what? You could be right, because I'm looking now at it. So Bone Tomahawk, he was the director, the writer, and the composer. So he does do music. Him.
Yeah.
Same with Brawl and Cell Block 99.
I think he might have looked the part back when he was a little bit younger and stuff, like he was in a black metal.
That's crazy. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he wrote some novels. I love his writing. Congregation of Jackals is a badass book. I've read a couple of his like unproduced scripts, and they were really good. He did a sci-fi one that I liked a lot. And he just came out with a graphic novel that's really cool, like a couple of years ago, Forbidden Surgeries of the Hideous Dr. Divinius.
Oh, cool.
It's really neat. It's like all black and white. But yeah, I'm a big fan of his work. It's very like manly stuff. But yeah, he also wrote, directed, and did the music and Dragged Across Concrete.
Okay.
So that was 2018.
I'm going to check out his written stuff then. I had no idea. I know, you know, responsible for the movies, but I know there's books that they're based on. So that's cool.
Yeah, I found some of the books on Amazon. Hug Chick Penny is another one. I haven't read that one yet.
Yeah, they're all like brutal ones. As like his films are like book wise, I should be in store for some good stuff.
Yes, absolutely. And you know, speaking earlier of Storms, what is that Stephen King one that you had? Was your top
Storm of the Century?
Storm of the Century. He has a script that he wrote. It's set in the you know, like Old West era, and it's kind of similar where Storm comes in, and but in this one, as a storm comes in, these gunslingers like take over the town. But the storm is almost like a evil entity in and of itself. That kind of is a shield over the town that hides them from getting like caught. But they're like going through like legitimate like rape and pillage of the town. It's crazy. It's such a good story, but it's kind of like you want to see the sheriff get his revenge, you know?
Right.
But yeah, it's kind of surprising that one never got produced, because I thought it was a fantastic script.
Well, who knows? Hopefully maybe to get picked up or something, you know?
Yeah, you never know. Things just sit around for a while.
Yeah, that's killer.
Yeah.
This has been a fucking fun ass talk. I really enjoy it. I love talking to Stephen King, especially with the person who loves Stephen King. So it works out great.
Yeah, for sure.
Oh, yeah, really enjoyed
it. Yeah, I had fun. Thank you.
Yeah. And we should do this again. We'll do like another top something to something. So we'll get together again and do another one. So,
yeah, anytime. I like all different sort of horror topics, and then even off topic of horror, but related, you know, whatever you want to do. I'm down.
Sounds good. And yeah, I hope you have a good rest of your weekend. And yeah, it was great talking with you.
All right. You too. Thanks a lot.
Take it easy.
All right. You too. Bye.